You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, our guest says that veterans make particularly good entrepreneurs, which is why veterans from around the region are meeting in Madison this weekend to work on growing their ideas into businesses.
First, we take a look at the political evolution of one of the most powerful politicians on Capitol Hill, Senate Minority Leader, maybe Majority Leader someday soon, Mitch McConnell.
Our next guest says in order to understand the transformation of Washington and American politics over the last few decades, we have to understand Mitch McConnell, Republican senator from Kentucky. He argues that McConnell embodies the transformation of the Republican Party and of politics in general in this country.
He's here to make that argument now. Alec McGillis joins us from the WYPR studios in Baltimore. He's senior editor at The New Republic and the author of The Cynic, The Political Education of Mitch McConnell. Alec, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, what is it about Mitch McConnell that grabbed you, made you want to write about him?
It is an unusual subject to take on. I think a lot of people don't think of Mitch McConnell as the most scintillating figure in politics, which was actually something I think has worked to his advantage over the years, that he hasn't gotten all that much scrutiny because he's so colorless, really, and kind of bland and inscrutable that we don't really look at him that much. But I decided that it was time to take him on in a big way, in a deep way, because to me, he represents two things better than just about anyone else in Washington. One is the transformation of the Republican Party over the past 30 years or so, from a party that was very, very ideologically diverse and regionally diverse, demographically diverse, to a party that is today much more orthodox in a whole lot of ways and homogenous in a whole lot of ways. The other element for me of the appeal in looking closely at McConnell is that he really, to me, represents a bipartisan trend in Washington, which I've come to really kind of deplore over my years covering Washington, which is just this mindset of the permanent campaign, where everything that matters is the next election, the next cycle, and winning that next cycle more than what you actually do when you get to Washington.
Let's go back to the start of his political career. As he was running for office for the first time, he was viewed as uncharismatic, not a natural politician by his own staff and people, as I understand it.
That's right. He was a very very clumsy candidate. He was not a natural for this game. And he knew that, to his credit. He knew that. He was very self-aware about that. And so he tried very hard to get better. And he would do multiple takes for his ads, his campaign ads, because he was just not a very, natural actor in the ads. And he was very, very happy when the crew would finally tell him, "Hey, Mitch, you did well." They actually had a nickname for him. Behind his back, they called him "Love Me, Love Me," because he was so eager for their approval. He got a little better over the years, as a candidate. But one reason that he's been so adamant about protecting the role of money in politics and trying to prevent new regulations on campaign spending and giving is that he came to realize that he really needed money for his races, needed to heavily outspend the opposition because he wasn't at all a natural candidate on the stump.
And some candidates over the years, politicians have bemoaned the fact that they have to spend a lot of time fundraising. Not so Mitch McConnell?
No, Mitch McConnell loves fundraising. It's remarkable. His Republican colleagues on the Hill told me that they just would marvel at him, just how much he enjoyed doing it. One time there was a moment where he went to a house to some potential donors he was told might be willing to give to him, and he realized he'd come to the wrong house, and he simply stayed and got the people whose house he'd come to give to him. He's very opportunistic that way. He really enjoys it. He has no compunction about asking for money at all.
Well, he came of political age at a time when Barry Goldwater was shaking up the Republican Party with a more strongly conservative view, but there was still a strong liberal Republican tradition in the country. Where did he fall in the early part of his career?
Well, this is the amazing thing. He fell very much at the liberal end of the Republican Party spectrum. There was this big war going on in the Republican Party in the early 60s with Goldwater and his folks on one side, and then a pretty strong moderate liberal contingent still on the other side. And Mitch very much lined up with the moderates. His great hero was a Kentucky senator called John Sherman Cooper, who he went to work for him briefly on the Hill and really held him up as his ideal. John Sherman Cooper opposed the Vietnam War very strenuously and also very strongly supported civil rights and helped push through the Civil Rights Bill. And both of those positions were not necessarily popular. In Kentucky, he did it anyway. And Mitch said that he admired him greatly for that. He was such a moderate back then that he got very excited reading an essay that had been written by a leading moderate Republican in Playboy. So apparently Mitch McConnell was reading Playboy for the articles. He actually was doing that. And he fired off a very enthusiastic letter to this gentleman saying how much he agreed with him about the importance of moderation.
And in at least one election, McConnell got endorsements from the AFL-CIO?
Exactly. He got in his first race for office in 1977, running for the county executive job in Louisville, in the biggest county, Jefferson County, the biggest county in Kentucky. He won partly because he got a lot of the sort of liberal local establishment on his side, including the newspaper editorial board and the AFL-CIO. He got them to support him by saying that he would support public employee collective bargaining, which is a topic of some relevance to Wisconsinites know about that. So here you have a Republican supporting public employee collective bargaining. He went to the bowling alley to sort of woo the head of the AFL-CIO, got their endorsement. And then went on to show his moderation even more in the next couple of years by being a very strong ally of the abortion rights advocates in Louisville. He was very effective at snuffing out abortion rights bills, anti-abortion bills that came into his office as county executive.
So following up on one of those two big themes you mentioned, how did Mitch McConnell move from there to being generally viewed as a solid conservative along with the rest of his party?
Well, what basically happened, and he's been pretty candid about this over the years, he just decided that it was going to be easier for him to win and going forward if he shifted way to the right. He saw where Kentucky and the South were going politically. He saw where the Republican Party was going, and he just decided that he needed to get on that bus. The key moment, if there was one, was in 1984 when he ran for the Senate for the first time. He barely won that Senate race against an incumbent sort of a conservative Southern Democrat. Meanwhile, Ronald Reagan won Kentucky that year by 250,000 votes. Mitch won by just 5,000 or so. And Mitch looks at this and he thinks, gosh, I don't ever want to come that close to losing again. If I want to win more easily in the future in this state, I clearly need to be more like Ronald Reagan. He had not supported Ronald Reagan either in 76 or 1980 in his primaries. But he decided that I need to make myself more like Ronald Reagan and more like where this party's heading.
And some of the things you just touched on hit that other theme. Mitch McConnell is a politician who wants to win, like any politician, but you say he pushed the envelope in ways that people weren't necessarily doing at the time.
That's true. He pushed the envelope in a couple of ways. He was, again, very aggressive on the fundraising front, and then later years very aggressive in trying to keep the status quo laws in place to allow that kind of fundraising to continue, or even to change the laws to make it even more, to make it even looser, the fundraising. He was also very aggressive when it came to negative campaigning, which is, again, nothing that, you know, he's hardly the only one who's engaged in that. But in Kentucky, this was sort of a new thing, the level to which he took it. The most sort of startling example was in 1990, in his first race for reelection. He had a pretty tough race against a very highly respected local physician who had, you know, worked at a clinic, volunteered at a clinic in eastern Kentucky years ago, then set up another clinic in the African-American West End of Louisville, had even, you know, served overseas in Vietnam as a doctor, went on to become mayor of Louisville. So they ran against each other in 90, close race. Mitch was too close for comfort. In the last couple weeks of the race, Mitch's campaign leaked to the press that this doctor had prescribed himself sleeping pills using an expired physician ID number, basically. And it got blown up into this big thing. They ran these unbelievably rough ads made by Roger Ailes. And Mitch pulled out that race. After he won that race, he proudly declared that it was the best campaign run in America that year.
And he, a lot of politicians set their sights. The big prize is maybe someday being president. It seems like Mitch McConnell, really, the Senate is his ambition, and maybe majority leader would be the pinnacle of that for him.
Exactly. He's never been one of those senators. You know, the joke is that everyone in the Senate wants to be president, but not Mitch McConnell. He's like Harry Reid in that regard, where he just so loves this institution and so wants nothing more than to climb to the pinnacle of the institution. The question is what he actually wants to do when he gets there, if there's been any goal all along other than just getting there.
We're talking to political reporter Alec McGillis about how the political evolution of Senator Mitch McConnell, he says, embodies the changes in the Republican Party, American politics, too, for that matter, at large.
And we're taking your calls. Do you think the Republican Party has changed in the last few decades? How would you characterize that change? And why do you think there have been so many shifts in American politics? How do you see it playing out in Wisconsin? Call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@WPR.org.
We'll pick up the discussion, take your calls after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now with political reporter Alec McGillis about how the political transformation of Republican Senator Mitch McConnell symbolizes larger changes in American politics.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts or questions about Mitch McConnell's career? How have you seen the Republican Party change over the last few decades? And how have you seen American politics change? So for the better or for the worse? And any lessons here from Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email talk@WPR.org. I have a comment from Lynn in Rockdale who asks, what do you think of Mitch McConnell's comments after Obama won the presidency that he was going to make sure Obama was a one-term president? What do you make of the McConnell's constant unwillingness to cooperate with the president? Alec, I think that quote was actually during the 2010 midterm elections. But still, what do you make of that comment?
That's a very good question. I get at the comment in my book. There's two ways of looking at that comment. One is that Mitch McConnell just had this real animus ad hominem feeling against Barack Obama from the get-go, and just wanted to see him, you know, just to see him laid low. But I think there's a more, in a way, more charitable interpretation, which fits into the theme I was talking about before, which is that Mitch McConnell, above all, just really wants to win the next cycle. That's how he's always been, and that's how he'll always be. And so when he said in late 2010, it was right before the midterm, maybe just after it, it was clear that the Republicans were going to be in the majority. And someone asked him, what are you going to do with this new power? What's your goal for these next couple years? And he said, well, our number one goal is to keep Obama from getting reelected. And it sounded terrible and awful and harsh, but in some ways, that is just how he's always thought. Of course, your goal in Washington is to win the next cycle. And for the Republicans in 2010, winning the next cycle meant Barack Obama losing in 2012. That's just how he thinks. There was a good profile of McConnell just a couple weeks ago in the Times magazine where he did speak to that reporter. He refused to speak to me for my book, but he spoke to that reporter. And the one thing he kept saying to the reporter was, hey, I'm 8-0, meaning that has 8 wins and 0 losses in his elections. And it really was like talking to a middle relief pitcher in baseball about his record for the year.
You said earlier this is something that Mitch McConnell is not alone on. You are worried, Alec, about a bipartisan trend of focusing more attention after you get elected on the next elections instead of governing. Is this really government-wide these days?
Yes, it's gotten much worse. I mean, to me, Mitch McConnell still embodies that tendency more than anyone, but you see more and more of it, and it has various causes. One of the causes, of course, is just the incredible cost of running for office now, in part because regulations that might have reform our finance system have been blocked by people like Mitch McConnell. But because it costs so much to run, you really do have to start raising money as soon as you come to Washington for your next race. So you're constantly sort of focused on your next race in that regard. I think the press has a role, definitely. I mean, the press just loves, there's nothing easier or more fun for the press than thinking about the next cycle, because you don't have to sort of focus on the actual governing or policy that's going on in Washington. You can just think about, what are going to be the tough races next time around? Who's vulnerable? Who's not? That kind of thing. And then in a way, I think it also has to do with Washington is getting more sealed off from the rest of the country and into this sort of bubble where you have these politicians who desperately don't want to have to leave it. They just want to stay for good. And like people like Mitch McConnell, who's now been there for really virtually his entire adult life. It's quite remarkable.
I'm going to a caller now. We've got Judy on the line in Milwaukee. Judy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am curious about the statement that Mitch McConnell decided he wanted to be reelected. He made decisions based on wanting to be reelected as opposed to core beliefs or whatever you want to call it. Did he say that?
He did not say it in those explicit terms that you just laid out, but he's been quite candid about his evolution and that he saw what was happening in the 80s. He saw how popular Ronald Reagan had been. He's been very candid in a couple. There's a historian in Kentucky, a retired historian, who McConnell gives annual oral history interviews to. He's done this for years. It's a sign of sort of how sort of historically significant he thinks that he is, that he's been giving these interviews to a historian. And in those interviews, and then also in an authorized biography that he helped put out a couple years ago, he was remarkably candid about his evolution and that it was basically him seeing where the winds were blowing and that he better get on the other side of the line.
Now, what's he like as a leader of Republicans in the Senate?
Well, it's been tricky for him, of course, because he's had to deal with this Tea Party insurgency, or however you want to describe that, and he's been privately very scornful of a lot of these folks, that they don't know how Washington works, and they come here thinking they can throw the whole thing over. But, of course, on the surface, he's been very accommodating because he wants to keep them on his side. Just the way after Rand Paul became elected in Kentucky in 2010, McConnell moved very quickly to get on his good side as well. As a leader of the Republicans, he's done a lot to appease them. And I would argue that he's actually done quite a bit to rev them up further, because by being so obstructionist in the Senate refusing to cooperate or work with negotiate with Obama on stuff, he's made it necessary for the Democrats to push through a lot of stuff like the health care bill on a party line vote instead of giving up a couple Republican votes in exchange for some policy concessions from the Democrats. And because Democrats push things through on the party line vote, that only further inflames folks on the Tea Party end of things. And so, in a sense, he's actually, I would argue, sort of helped gin up that movement.
And that movement had a primary challenge to him this year, which he survived. Was he at risk at any point because of that?
Well, he was at risk to some degree just because he's at risk to some degree now because he is so remarkably unpopular in Kentucky. It's really odd to think about the fact that you have someone who's sort of leading the conservative vanguard in Washington, holding the line against Obama, in a state that doesn't like Obama, a state that's gotten quite red over the years, and yet his approval ratings are very low in Kentucky. He's built up none of that sort of affections that you often see from veteran politicians in their states. Sort of well of sympathy. He just doesn't have that. So he was vulnerable to some extent. The candidate who ran against him was flawed. And Mitch went all out in trying to sort of outflank him to the right. I mean, he even went so far as to hire Rand Paul's former campaign manager and family member to run his campaign to sort of help keep the Tea Party people in the McConnell fold.
Why is it? Why doesn't he have that sense of support? Does it go back to the beginning of his political career where he's just not a natural politician?
I think it does. And I think that a lot of Kentuckians have seen enough of him over the years to sort of figure him out. And they sort of know what he's up to, that he's there mainly in Washington to climb that ladder and to accrue his own, to build up his own station, his own stature. That said, they are also reluctant to cut him loose because they like the fact that their own senator is so senior in Washington and so powerful. Back in the day when we had earmarks, it meant getting a lot of earmarks. And now it just means having sort of just knowing that your guy's at the table. And for a state like Kentucky that ranks low on a lot of, you know, metrics of income and what have you, it's often unfairly looked down upon. It's nice to have your guy at the table at the end of the day.
As we wrap up, Alec, you mentioned his place in history. I mean, come November, he might be Senate Majority Leader. He might be unemployed. Either way, as of now, is he a significant figure in American political history?
I do believe he is, not so much for what he's accomplished, because it would be hard to find specific things that he's accomplished beyond the campaign finance issue. But he's significant for sort of what he represents, and for how he embodies this. Really, better than anyone else, I think he embodies this with what has happened to the grand old party in these 30 years and what has happened to the political culture in Washington.
Alec, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Alec MacGillis. He's senior editor at The New Republic. He is with us to talk about his new ebook. It's called The Cynic, The Political Education of Mitch McConnell, talking about what the Kentucky senator, the current Senate Majority Leader, tells us about the history of the Republican Party and American politics and the future of those as well.